Hello, hello. Welcome to Season 4 of the Chicago Techies Podcast, the show that highlights the voices of Chicago innovators and their journeys. This season, we're shining a spotlight on founders, from bootstrap beginnings to bold visions. We're diving into what it really takes to build right here in Chicago. I'm your host, Cecilia Benitez. Thanks for tuning in. Hey, Al, thanks for joining me on this week's episode of the Chicago Techies Podcast. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm good, good. I'm excited to get to know your startup and yourself more. I know we already had a pre-call a couple of weeks ago, but I'm excited to just, you know, get to dive in and ask you some of the fun questions. So let's get started with just your name, your pronouns, where you're from, and your current role.
Yeah, so my name is Al Lagunas. I'm he, him. I'm from Chicago. And I am the founder and CEO of Levy.
Heavy. Nice. And okay, so let's just jump right in.
Cool.
How did Levy come about?
Oh, man. So right out of college, I worked at a startup for 4 years, and it was awesome. It was a great experience. After that, I went to go work in big tech. I worked at Amazon. And it really started when I realized that I kind of hated big tech. I hated the big corporate world. There's a lot of rules. You can't move fast. You can't break things. And you're kind of forced to just do what the people who have been there tell you to do because they've been there. They know what they're doing, which, you know, as we probably all know, is often isn't the case. So about a year after working at Amazon, my longtime friend, Guillermo, been friends since we were 14, he's always been on the technical side. You know, we started kind of toying around with some ideas that we had. And we had, it was not in the space. I think we'll get to, you know, the pivots piece about in a bit, but it wasn't in the space. But we started kind of digging for areas and ideas that we, you know, we'd had for a long time and seeing, you know, if we wanted to escape kind of the corporate world, if we wanted to build our own thing and really take a shot, you know, what we could work on. So, you know, that's kind of the shortened version of the story of what, you know, how we started Levy, or, you know, how Levy came into being.
Yeah. And let's tell the audience what Levy is. Like, what is the function? What are the functionalities and for what teams?
Yeah. So we build technology for hospitality teams, specifically back of house teams, like housekeepers, maintenance teams in hotels, and everything's vision and voice AI based. The reason for that is, you know, if you work in one of these roles like that, a frontline role, being able to plug away info to computers is difficult. You're not really sitting at a desk. So the challenge here was, you know, how can we help teams that are out there doing blue collar frontline work? How can we help them use computers the way that, you know, you and I can, who have been sitting at desk for, you know, a large part of our careers or working in that white collar corporate setting? So what our technology does is it inspects rooms, quality control aspects for hotel rooms. It trains new employees, all vision and voice guided, helps them get up to speed, and really serves as their co-pilot to do a lot of the admin work that, you know, frontline employees are often tasked with doing.
Yeah. And I'm actually curious if there was a particular story that kind of influenced you to think about this potential project.
Yeah. So yeah, I mentioned how when Guillermo and I started working on ideas, we really wanted to focus on the user and the user that we knew best. So both Guillermo and I are first generation Mexican Americans. I grew up in Pilsen, for those who are familiar with Chicago, and Guillermo grew up in Little Village. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this user makes up a huge, huge part of the workforce. And for us, that was the focus is, you know, what user do we know best is like our parents, our moms. So we looked at industries that had demographics that, you know, had kind of that same user base and where that user base was really important. So yeah, I think, you know, we focused on where do we know something that other people don't. It was, you know, around teaching our parents how to use technology, teaching, you know, this underserved community that's really the backbone of many industries, you know, how to use tech. So we're like, okay, how can we start, you know, now building tech around them versus forcing them to learn tech and adapt to it?
Yeah. And how did you go about finding those people, like the focus groups? Why this hospitality route?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that, you know, I always tell people when they have ideas is don't keep them a secret. Mm-hmm. Tell everyone about it, because that's how you're going to get connected to people. That's how you're going to get feedback on what you're building. So for us, it was, you know, the interviews, and it was also a lot of pitching to businesses we thought we were going to sell to. So I talked to gyms, restaurants, you know, friends, family, and just told them what we were working on. And, you know, they would give some feedback on their perspective. And it was funny. One of the things that we'd always hear, like especially when we're early on, people would say, you know, I don't want to poke holes in your idea. And I'd be like, no, like, please poke holes in it and help us like figure out what we don't see. So by talking about it with a lot of people, interviewing a lot of people, we ended up finding someone in the hospitality world. It was a GM of a DoubleTree. And we had no connections into the hotel world, but again, through just continuing to talk about it, getting what we were building out in front of people, we made those connections. And you know, from there, it was a lot of cold messaging, cold email, cold calls. At one point, Guillermo, you know, would drive around, and I would be in shotgun, and we'd go to every hotel, and I would just jump out and go into the hotel and see if someone would talk to me. So yeah, I was just kind of getting out there and talking about it as much as you can.
That's the real hustle right there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I imagine that being early on, you know, there's still a lot of there's a lot of difficulties in building a product that is, you know, traditionally been manual labor. So I'm very people driven, I guess. So I'm curious, you know, what have been some of the early challenges that you noticed as you build?
Yeah, I think what's been really interesting is, you know, blue collar workers, frontline workers often get dismissed. There's a big misconception that manual labor is unskilled labor, when in reality, these workers have tons of skills. There's just no way to track them or understand them. So, you know, early on, and one of the challenges that we faced was, okay, this is cool technology, but I am the buyer and I've never worked a frontline job. So I don't really understand the impact that this has in my role. It's like, oh, yeah, we have these frontline workers, and sure, you know, what's crazy is, you know, these hotels spend 40% of their revenue on these hourly frontline workers, and they, again, have no understanding of them. But even getting them to, again, understand the impacts that these workers have, and, you know, they're called frontline workers for a reason. They're the closest to your customer, the closest to your product. So getting them to really understand the impact that they have has definitely been a challenge. On the bright side, though, post-pandemic, you know, the labor constraints that the economy has faced have really shined a light on frontline blue-collar workers, which has gotten a lot of people to wake up to what we're building.
Yeah. I mean, that's surprising to me, at least, that all these hotels and hospitality companies don't even understand their own workers or what their needs are. So I'm actually curious about, I'm sure you have integrated a lot of AI into this product. So I'm curious if there's been a challenge introducing that to these hotels. Do they understand it? Do they know how to use it? Are they tech savvy? What has been a challenge there?
Yeah, it's funny. There was actually 1871. They had a panel one time with someone from AWS. I can't remember who it was, but you know, they were talking about how we need to teach people how to prompt and how to use tech and all this. I told them that really places the burden on the user. It's like the goal of everything should be to make it so easy that anyone can use it, but they don't have to learn all these tools and techniques and how to use it. So for us, you know, the reason we leaned on using vision and voice is because you don't have to worry about, you know, opening the right field, plugging in the right form, whatever it might be when you're used to working with technology. You know, now it's all just visual based. For example, the mobile app that the housekeeping teams use, it has one button on it, and it's the start button. Everything else is visually guided. Mm-hmm. So from that aspect, you know, we've gotten great feedback and a lot of buy-in just on the practicality of the AI tools that we're using. You know, I think a lot of people get carried away with what AI can do, which they should. It's exciting. But the reality is, you know, in order to get it adopted, it's like, let's solve one problem really, really well. And then once we do that, we can build the next feature and the next AI tool and then build on that. So that's been our approach, and it's worked well. Like I said, making it simple where you don't really have to learn how to use tech anymore than you already do. And then on top of it is being able to deliver on one value prop immediately, so that way people can buy in and then see, okay, we see the value, let's keep growing with this.
Yeah, I looked at one of your videos on your website. It was essentially a demo of a hotel room, and I saw that it was so easy to just take a picture, and then it will let them know like what has been done, what needs to be done, all that, or what needs to be corrected. And then it made me think of my parents, because my parents, when I was young and in high school, they used to work at as janitors at schools. And my mom would complain all the time that like some people didn't know what they were doing, and you know, she wished that she could be there helping them and like letting them know. I feel like she would And for someone that is, you know, older or like in a different generation than us, like a picture is so much easier to do than anything else, than like having to input data or something on their phones. And, you know, without having that, like that user experience is just so flawless. So I was super excited to see that you guys had, you know, innovated in this space.
I appreciate that. That's one thing, you know, we always talked about early on and still talk about is, you know, our like leading design principle for the app is, would my mom know how to use this?
Yeah.
And you know, I always make the joke that like my mom always has the newest iPhone. She likes to treat herself. She has no idea how to use it. She knows how to play Candy Crush, and she knows how to take pictures and videos, and that's it. And that's kind of, you know, the approach is like, can we make this so easy that it's like taking a video? And you know, from the corporate side of it, from the leadership side of it, you get all the information you want, and from the user side of it, it's super easy to use, where it almost feels gamified.
Yeah, my mom is the same way. She has, we usually gift her the latest iPhones too, but the only thing she uses it is for Facebook, WhatsApp, calling people, calling us, and pictures.
Yeah, exactly. My mom uses Facebook too, I should say.
Yeah. I want to shift gears a little bit to the just building here in Chicago and being part of the ecosystem. Curious if you use any local resources or any of the local accelerators or communities that have been valuable to you so far.
Yeah, we early on, so last year we were heavily involved with 1871. And originally, actually way back when we first started building, we were building a hardware product. We were at MHelp for like 2 months, and then we quickly pivoted to strictly software-based product. So we spent a lot of time at 1871, and you know, I loved it. It was great for that, you know, first year. And I think the biggest kind of takeaway that I had from it is, I think it's a great opportunity to meet people, but it's still on you to develop your own network from there. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people kind of go in there thinking, you know, that you're going to meet all these people, and you do. I think you kind of have to carry those networks outside of it and build from it. And that's, you know, what we were able to do. A lot of people that work with us now or that have helped us are people that we met through those local resources. And now we have a strong relationship that I have a strong relationship with outside of that. So yeah, definitely it's been great to have those resources.
Agreed. I feel like, you know, as being staff there before, I feel like I noticed that a lot of founders would sometimes get frustrated that I think their expectations were a little bit different on what we were able to provide. You know, you still have to show up.
Yeah.
You still have to talk to people. You still have to kind of make those connections and build those relationships. I feel like a lot of them sometimes, I'm gonna go call it out, that sometimes they just want everything handed to them on a platter. And that's not necessarily like the realistic expectation of a founder, right? Like it's not
right
what you should be expecting. Like you should be expecting to be grinding like you, like driving to a hotel, hoping to talk to someone.
Yeah.
Like, but I'm curious if there are any local mentors too, or just, you know, people that have helped you get either investor meetings or any kind of, you know, business out there that has been critical for you.
Yeah, man, I'm definitely going to forget a ton of people, but the first person that comes to mind has actually become a really good friend. His name's Kenny Rose. His company's called Fran Shares, F-A-R-A-N Shares. But he, so Chicago Ventures was like an early investor in his. And, but he was great. I actually met him through a charity poker game that was held at TechNexus. And him and I became really good friends. And early on, you know, he was, he's about like a year ahead of where we are at, or you know, right around there. A lot of the kind of journey that we've been going through, he's always had some immediate advice on. It was great with connecting me with VCs in the area, and again, just other people. Very social guy. So that was someone who was really big. Like I said, I know I'm definitely forgetting people, but that's probably one that I'll give him a quick shout out on.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. It's always great to hear that there are local people that, you know, show up for one another. And you talked about a little bit of funding. So I'm curious if you have raised that, you know, funding already, or what is that experience has been like for you?
Yeah, we have. And, you know, for the most part, we've been very about as smart as we can be, you know, raising money, making sure that we don't take on too much early, but we have raised money. And, you know, what's really interesting is you know, what they say is true about, you know, building those relationships and getting to meet these investors. And I think a lot of people, I think my advice on that and like how I would approach it is you hear it. And, you know, I think we made the mistake early on where we were building the business, but we really didn't have a business yet or didn't have anything ready to go just yet. And we're like, oh, we'll go raise money from these venture investors now. But a lot of it, you know, again, looking back at it, it's like, oh, we should have focused a little bit more on the business early on, which we ended up doing. But yeah, I think, you know, with a lot of folks on the business, a lot of meeting these people and then kind of keeping them updated, you'll see them obviously going to these events, building those relationships. And you know, by the time you are ready and by the time, you know, they're ready to invest, it's a way easier decision for them. Like a few weeks ago, it was a VC that I'd known for a while now. And you know, we were looking for someone to come in with some other investors. Sent him a quick email. And within two emails, he's like, all right, cool, I'm in. And it wasn't because he, you know, was like so convinced on what we were doing. It actually took a long time for him to understand what we were doing. I'd known him for about a year. He's a great resource, great mentor. And like I said, when the time came that we were like, okay, we're going to go raise this money, it was not even kidding. It was a 2 to 3 email exchange where it was just like, hey, this is what we have. This is what we need. Are you in? He's like, yeah, I'm in. Let's jump on a call to wrap it up. I was like, okay, cool. So
that's awesome. Yeah. But to your point though, I feel like I have come across a lot of founders that, you know, get excited and they're very early on, sometimes even just in the ideation phase, and they already want to meet with investors. But they have nothing to show. And I think it's just like something that they need to learn early on that's necessarily how it works. You know, you need to have some, you know, even if you're pre-product, like pre-revenue, all of that, like there is a way to go about this and you have to be prepared. You have to understand like all of the things that go into a potential like raise. And a lot of them just like want to meet them already and just, you know, get that money without having necessarily done any of the research or the pre-work that has to be done beforehand.
Yeah. As a founder, obviously you believe in what you're building, you believe in your abilities or else you wouldn't try starting a company. But you know, there's a lot of competition out there. A lot of the founders that you're competing against also, you know, are very brilliant people, have very good ideas. Now it's about who can start executing on those ideas. And it's you know, that execution of it that I think helps build conviction, you know, with those investors that are out there. You know, one of the jokes I say is that, you know, you hear that, you know, VCs invest in founders at the earliest stages. And it's true, but there's some caveats to that where, you know, if you went to Stanford, sure, they're in. If you have a Harvard MBA, sure, they're in early. And a lot of that's just, you know, around your resume and the work that you've done to get there. But if you don't have that kind of bulletproof education or you have founded a company in the past, you have no track record. So you have to build that out. And that's, you know, on our end, we didn't go to, you know, an Ivy League school, didn't go to Stanford or anything like that. So we had very, very strong resumes from our careers, but it was like, okay, great. Can you start executing? Can you start delivering on that? So I think that's what would be my advice for anyone who doesn't have, you know, a very decorated track record from one of those top schools or something like that is, you know, build, execute, and prove you can execute. And then, you know, you can go get that money.
For sure. Now, you know, as you're growing, how many people are in your team right now?
There is 4 and 1 intern. So yeah, 4 of us total.
Where do you work out of?
We work from home. For a while, we had a space at Industrious. And then we realized that we were all just kind of sitting on top of each other and we were all on calls all the time. So yeah, we were like, all right, let's just work from home. Especially again, as you know, the business side of the company, it's like, I'm on calls from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. every single day. And it's like, if we're in a small rented office, it's like, yeah, we can't really be loud or else the other people are there. So yeah, we're just working remote right now. We all live like in the West Loop area. So it's easy for us to get together and sync.
Yeah, no, that's smart. I mean, I feel like a lot of companies after COVID have pretty much been remote, you know, at least until they're ready to scale, maybe after their Series A or Series B, or depending on the product too that they're building, most of them are choosing to be remote. But there's so much space in Chicago right now that has not been utilized. but I feel like they have to get creative. Real estate companies have to start getting creative on how to do that.
I always tell the guys, I'm like, I say it jokingly, but I'm also super serious. I'm like, guys, we are an in-office company. The moment it makes sense for us to be in an office, all right? Yeah. I'm like, big believer, you know, being in the office, especially, you know, at the earliest stages. But yeah, at the same time, you know, it's like, if we go rent out an office, it's going to be, you know, $3,000 to $4,000 a month. And it's like, it's smarter for us to use $3,000 to $4,000 a month on maybe a contractor that we can help us accelerate the business, accelerate the product. So it's about balancing that. And I think that's another piece of advice that I would give to founders is like, you know, just because you can spend money on something, is there another resource? It's at the end of the day, you're just managing constraints. So it's like, where can you use that money to kind of open up some of those constraints, you know, give yourself another resource versus spending on something like an office or another tool that you might not need?
Yeah, for sure. I wanna dig a little deeper on just like the AI industry in general, like in your customer approach. You know, hospitality is still catching up, I think, in terms of AI, right? And I feel like AI is changing so rapidly. I'm curious if you've thought about how hotels can operate in more efficient ways in the next, you know, 5-10 years as you see it.
Yeah, so, you know, the reason we really dug into the hotel industry and frontline jobs in general, when it comes to AI and the tools that are out there, and obviously your ChatGPTs, your LLMs, they're trained on all the data that we've already captured. So that's all the data that, you know, is on a computer somewhere there. So the next piece of it is like to give yourself an advantage to, you know, where's that next evolution? And it really happens in areas where we don't have data yet. Like that's where we can start bringing tools in, collect that data and power AI. So, you know, when we look at hotels operate in a physical space. You go to the hotel, the business happens in the physical world. It isn't like, somebody just spend on an email or like Salesforce doing. It's a very physical world industry. So for the hotel industry and again, for any physical world industry like that, I think that's where the biggest opportunities lie with helping, you know, frontline workers or even helping like people who are working as a desk agent at a hotel. If they have a voice AI tool that can now help them, you know, automatically check a guest in when they walk in just based off the conversation they're having with them.
Yeah.
It can help them, build a guest profile around them because they had a call with them and now they have more information and can understand that. So there's a lot of different things you can do from, again, an efficiency standpoint in these physical world jobs when you bring it to it. The trick is gathering that data, and that's, you know, what we're focused on doing.
Yeah. And then I'm assuming you're also collecting a lot of customer feedback and a lot of customer data. So I'm curious if you've identified like any unexpected customer insight or something that has kind of helped you as you build?
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think of which one would be the best. So I think on the customer insight side, it was a really funny conversation that we had. This was with Marriott when we first, you know, rolled out to one of their properties. They didn't know how many errors were in the room. So all these big, you know, branded hotels, they're all very standardized. So every hotel, every Marriott property, every Hilton property should be exactly the same when you walk in. The reality is they're not. They think they are, but they're not. So when something's wrong, you know, a manager or someone has to correct it or just kind of stay there. What we were able to give them in terms of data, and it was really, again, the reason it was a really interesting conversation is because when we were starting to collect this data, we knew what the cost of missing an item in a room was, or if they miss, if someone misplaced an item in a room, it's $1.33. So for every error in a room, it costs the hotel $1.33 in revenue. When we asked them if they knew what that number was, they had no idea because they never tracked it. When we asked them if they knew how many rooms had an error, they had no idea because they had no way of tracking that. So being able to bring them, you know, those insights and data, they can go, holy crap, we're bleeding money because we don't have any information on this. Love you, give us that information. Let's do this. It's a no-brainer. So that was the big piece of it is then getting them data, because especially like in hotels, you know, you can't obviously have a camera in the hotel room. It's like, how do you get that, you know, high fidelity data and data that you can depend on and understand? That's kind of the trick that we've been solving for them, is getting them to better understand you know, that product that they're delivering, which the product for them is a hotel room. So getting them to better understand that product they're delivering.
Yeah. I'm curious how you measured or how do you estimate like that, that them losing that money?
It was a lot of following people around. And that was a big advantage for Guillermo and I. We both speak Spanish and majority, so 81% of the housekeeping teams in the U.S. speak Spanish as a primary mm-hmm. language. So, you know, for the first, I think it was like 2 to 3 weeks before we even rolled out the tech, we just worked with these housekeeping teams at these hotels. At one point, you know, not even kidding, we were cleaning rooms with them, like just trying to understand the job. And then when, you know, the housekeeper would clean the room, then a manager would come in to inspect it. And the managers are moving very quickly. So they're fixing all these little errors and not really thinking about it. While we were there, we were able to track how many errors they were fixing, how often those errors came up. And by doing that, you know, looking at what the revenue rates were, what, you know, people get paid, how all that happened, we can tell them exactly, like, you know, this manager spends all this time correcting errors. If they didn't have to do that, you know, they could spend their time doing other things. So like you're essentially paying them to do a job twice. And yeah, that's how we're able to start quantifying the impact.
Yeah. That's smart. That I would not have thought about that. it that way.
And I think it's hard, but it's also fun in the sense that, you know, all the data that we started benchmarking against didn't exist anymore because, again, no one's collected it. And I think it's a challenge, but it's also the fun part because if no one's collected it, you can't like jump on Google and, you know, find what an error cost a hotel. Why? Because again, it's never been measured. So being able to, have to go out there and actually conduct these experiments, do this research, not only gave us the firsthand knowledge, but also allows us to serve as kind of that source of truth for these hotels and being able to give them the data and they go, okay, these people are very, very, giving us very reliable data that we've never had before. Like what else can they do for us?
Yeah, no, I feel like that's like a great example of category design that you're doing here. I'm curious about advice that you've received as a founder, as you know, either early on or now. What has been one piece that has resonated with you and that you continue to carry it with you?
That is a good question. I think so much of it is just like so ingrained in my head now that I don't even think about it. One of the things that we've done really well and that, you know, I've continued to try and get better at is marketing and talking about your business, whether it's on LinkedIn, whether it's early on, or you're just talking to people is, you know, you want as much feedback as possible. You want to listen to it as much as you can. I think you still have to have conviction in what you're building. And you know, if you believe in it, that's great. That's what you want. But I think the biggest piece of advice is, you know, get what you're doing out there because no one knows about it. Like no one knows about what you're building. No one knows about what you're doing. No one knows about the problem you're trying to solve. And I think a lot of people often get caught up in just working and trying to build this product and just working on, you know, this thing that they're doing, but they don't have the feedback. They don't have the insights from, you know, other companies that might want to work with them in some way. So I think that's the biggest thing. Like, yes, build your products, focus on that, but at the same time, get it out there. Don't worry about, you know, other people stealing it. The reality is that, you know, from working at Amazon and working at these like big companies, just kind of realize that no one has time for anything and that no one's really as motivated as you are. So for anyone to even start trying to build or work on what you're building, it's going to take them a year to even get it approved. It's going to take them a year to get the resources allocated and then another year to kind of like figure out even how to build it. So I would say talk about your product, market it, get it out there. And even then, like, you know, you're going to have to execute on it. If someone tries to copy it, they're going to have to execute it on it as well. Yeah. So I think that's the biggest piece is continue to get it out there. And that's how people are going to find out about you. That's how people are going to say, oh, you know what? That's interesting. Let me talk to this person or I know someone in the hotel industry. Let me talk to Al and see if, you know, I can connect them with them. There was an event I went to about a year ago now. It was that CDW random event. Was talking to someone there. They were in like the cannabis industry, completely random. Mm-hmm. And he ended up knowing someone in the hospitality industry. Like, oh, I'll connect you. And I didn't think much of it. And at the time, that person that connected us with ended up being our biggest angel investor. And he was our biggest angel investor until like about 2 weeks ago. But he was our biggest angel investor. He was a president of the largest organization in the US for hotels, knows every CEO, chairman at every hotel travel company, and turned out one of the most like recognized people in the industry. And I would have never met him if I didn't go to this random CDW event and talk to this random person.
Yeah.
So I thought, you know, at the time I was like, oh, this guy probably, you know, doesn't know anyone that's useful to me. Turned out he knew someone who was like been one of the most pivotal people in our company so far.
That's wild. I mean, and that tells you all about storytelling, right? Like, you know, mm-hmm. how you tell your story, how you tell about your company, how you talk about just what you're building and who can people, it'll surprise you, I guess, like knows who, like it's wild. I love that. And curious if you have identified already some sort of mistake that you made early on that turned into a huge lesson for you.
Oh man. I'm trying to think of only one. Yeah, you know what? I think this one would be really relevant for the audience you have. But I mentioned my good friend Kenny Rose, and about almost a year and a half ago was when we were first starting, and we had nothing. We didn't even have our first customer yet. We had, you know, like a mini proof of concept pilot done with a DoubleTree. We didn't have anything, and Kenny was already very well connected in the VC scene in Chicago, so he introduced me to a lot of people in the VC industry here in Chicago. And when I met with them all, you know, met with them, showed them what we were building, but we didn't know anything. Like, we didn't understand the industry. We didn't have a deep industry understanding yet. So I spent a lot of time meeting with these VCs early on, and again, looking back at it, it was a lot of wasted effort. Learned. A lot of wasted effort where we weren't at a point where we were investable. We weren't at a point where we even knew really directionally what we were building. And you know, when we went back out to raise, months after that, probably like 6 to 9 months after that, a lot of those VCs that we met with already had kind of this idea of what we were doing. I mean, it was wrong because, you know, we were doing something not different, but it was we were definitely just had a better understanding. But, you know, going back and talking to them again, it's like people already have these preconceived notions and think they already kind of peg you, you know, somewhere as like, oh, they're doing this, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I think that's a big piece is, you know, don't go out too early. Don't oversell your deal. Don't try and raise from the wrong people too early. Early on, your first investors are going to be friends and family. Your second set of investors going to be angel investors from the industry that know what they're doing, that can help kind of push the business forward in the early stages. And then after that, you know, then you go and talk to these venture funds who can actually dig in and start looking at it more from the complete business perspective.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I want to ask about these challenges, right? And all these learnings that you have, and being a founder is very difficult. And I'm sure it takes a lot of mental tolls, you know, for you too. So I'm curious how you manage personally that uncertainty that being a founder brings with. How do you manage your life, essentially?
Yeah, we figure that out every day. But I think what's important, and so I'll give you an example. This past June was easily the most successful June we've ever had. We onboarded some new clients. We won. It was 3 weeks in a row where there was these major industry awards that went out. We swept all of them, every major industry innovation award. And that was in June. You know, the highs were high. Yeah. At the end of June, we had a deal that was going to go through. Biggest deal yet. We were kind of banking on that, ready to, you know, hit the ground running once it closed. The day that it was supposed to close, I get an email from them saying, let's jump on a call. Ends up falling through. And at that point, I was like, oh my God, like, are we dead? What are we going to do? But I think the biggest thing is that you remember that, you know, every problem that we've faced up until this point, we figured out both, you know, personally in your life and like also in the business, like you've figured out every problem that you ran into. What's one more? Like, is this the one that's actually going to break you? So I think taking that approach is like, okay, I've figured out every challenge that we've had up until now. Now we have a new one. Why can't I figure this one out? Like, why is this one different? And in the moment, like, yeah, you're gonna be like, oh crap, this feels insurmountable. The reality is, again, you've you figured out every challenge you've had up until now. This is just one more. And no matter how dire it looks, you got to remember that, you know, you got yourself to this point. And you again, you figured out everything up until this point. Like, this is just another one you have to figure out.
You're making it sound like it truly feels like a roller coaster ride.
Oh yeah, 100%, 100%.
Yeah. Well, let's start wrapping up. I want to talk a little bit about just like the future. You know, what's next? Are you thinking about expanding, or you know, any, adding other products, verticals beyond hotels, or what's in your mind for it?
Yeah, I think on the vertical side, probably not yet. You know, that'll be something we get market pull from a lot of like residential companies that are, I don't know what the correct explanation is, but like a lot of these, like especially in Chicago, you have a lot of these massive condo buildings that are like super nice, like luxury high-end buildings. So we get a lot of market pull for that. I think, you know, series B time, you know, when we get to that point, we'll start expanding to verticals that are more general prop tech versus, you know, hospitality. So yeah, right now being hyper-focused on what we're doing is going to be key. It's like, we can't get to other verticals if we don't have success in the first vertical we have.
Yeah.
So that's what we're focused on. On the product side, you know, there's already from our core product to where we're at now, I think there's like three or four different products that we've started to build out that are either in beta. One of them we just rolled out. Now, you know, I think it's very similar to, first thing that came to my head, but like, Google, right? So Google, you have your Google Drive, and then they expand it into Docs because that's the next kind of iteration. And you have your Google Slides and all that. So, you know, what we've done is with our core product that we built, that room inspection tools, we have all this information now that no one has. So it's like, what would you do with that information? It's like, oh, we can build HR tools, which is kind of that first thing that we started building around training and onboarding. So now, rather than just being this efficiency tool for the teams, now we're helping with HR processes with procurement. That's another piece. We're probably not going to do that for like another year or two. But you know, these frontline workers are the ones who know what's out of stock, what's in stock before anyone else. So now we start playing on the procurement side. Can we start, you know, working with that data that we have to start ordering these items ahead of time and track that? You know, so there's a lot of different things that we can do, but you know, it's about building that base first and having the information to do it and building the moat. And that's what we're focused on doing in the short term. But yeah, that's kind of how we look at it.
Yeah, no, and that's exciting. I was talking to a couple of friends yesterday about how when you're building something or you're focusing on something, you know, you have all this data and then you start asking questions. And you open a door and you realize that there's five windows that you can like, you know, try to work on and out of. And it's an exciting place to be. You know, it's as you build and you can discover more problems, and those problems bring you more problems. It's just like an exciting time to be building and discovering new things.
Yeah, that was one of the things that we had to keep in check early on, where, you know, once we started going out to customers and doing more and more demos, there was so many requests that we got because people started recognizing what was now possible. And it's like, okay, we can't build out these 100 features that everyone wants, or else we're just going to be, you know, building forever. It's like, let's focus on these core features, sell that, you know, create the business. Then as we can go raise money, we can, you know, start expanding the product line.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's definitely it, where there's a feature bloat is the phrase that you often hear. Yeah.
At least not yet, right? Like as you grow, you can start building that on. So if you, another kind of hard question, like if, you know, as you look 10 years ahead, you know, what do you think success would look like for you?
So I think the thing that I think about, and I talk about this with VCs, founders, everyone is like, you know, you got to have your reason to win that is business related because you're building a business. But also you have to have like a something that's just like deep down inside, like a bigger mission that you want to, that you're fighting for. Cause especially early on, it's like, you're not going to make a ton of money when you're building your company. So there has to be something other than something else that motivates you. Yeah. So I look at like 10 years from now, I think for us coming from a blue collar immigrant background, we have a lot of respect for our parents, a lot of respect for these workers. And like I said at the beginning, they don't get the credit that they deserve. They often don't, you know, get recognized as being instrumental for what the work they're doing. So I think 10 years from now, you know, for us, it's like not only the industry, but every industry recognizes the impact that these workers have and how arming them with tools like technology, you know, for the first time can do great things for the business as a whole. I think getting those employees recognized, building, you know, tech that is for everyone, that everyone can benefit from, not just, you know, another notes app or another email tool. That's what's big for us. And that's, you know, when I look at the next 10 years, like that's where I think we want to be, is having being one of the driving forces behind that, you know, the companies that brought tech to these frontline jobs.
For sure. I really appreciate the intentionality that you're bringing to put this product. And like, especially, you know, for let's be honest. I mean, a lot of these people working are immigrants and people that are, you know, basically our parents and our family. So I like that you're so passionate about this work because it's personal. And when it's personal, you know, there's a lot of heart there. So definitely commend you for all the work that you're doing and, you know, stepping in their shoes and trying to make their lives easier is something that I really admire. So
I appreciate great job. It.
And for anyone that, you know, that might be curious about your company or want to learn more, how can they connect with you?
Yeah. So on LinkedIn, Al Lagunas, and then Levy, L-E-V-E-E. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. I haven't posted in like 2 weeks. So I got to get on that, but definitely feel free to connect on LinkedIn, shoot me a message. Our website is levy.biz, B-I-Z. At some point we'll change the website, but it's fine for now.
All right. Well, thank you, Al, so much for joining me and best of luck with everything. I'm excited for you and we'll definitely keep in touch and just kind of continue with your journey and keep an eye on you.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Chicago Techies podcast. If you enjoy listening, don't forget to subscribe, share, and leave a review on iTunes. Let's continue the conversation on social media. We are at Chicago Techies on all social media platforms. Thank you again, and we'll see you next time.